This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change it, point it to me, press it, snap it, work it, click it, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, jam and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it.
Hey, this is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to Technogaze, where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets, technology and anything else that goes beep in the night. I'm Michael, and in the studio we've got Raina, fresh from the World Cup.
Hello. Fresh from my couch, you mean? God, I wish I was in Brazil. I mean, I love being here, but Brazil.
Brazil would be good, wouldn't it? Yes. And in a Freaky Friday swap, we've got Mark steering the boat this week. How are you?
Good morning. Good afternoon, in good. Fact.
It is the afternoon.
It is.
And of course, if you want to get in touch with us at any time during today's show, you can SMS us directly to the studio on 0427JOY949. Send an old-fashioned email on air at joy.org.au or leave a message on the phone to Mushin by dialing 1300JOY949.
That's right.
So, lots of ways to get in touch.
Indeed.
So this week, or today's show, we've got some news, including Iran's move to make it illegal to access Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So after about 4 years of having a ban on Facebook, it's now illegal to use. Drones have been caught spying at the World Cup.
Ooh.
And I think Rain is going to report on that, being our local World Cup representative.
Such an unofficial...
Unofficial from her couch.
Sports dork.
And Melbourne City Loop is finally getting mobile phone and data coverage.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I don't know about finally, right? Like, we've been talking about it for a very long time, on and off, haven't we? Right?
We have, but I believe it's happening.
It might actually result in some coverage in the city loop at some stage very soon, as opposed to we're finally talking about it.
Yes.
Which is good.
Exactly.
What else is on the list?
Well, a little bit later on, we're going to talk about the latest push from the new government to stop us pirates, because George Brandis has labelled Australians as the worst offenders in the world.
You're very naughty, Australia.
We are.
Very naughty.
And the tech heavyweights of this world, companies like Oracle, Microsoft and Apple, argue that legislating against unfair pricing for Australians is bad for their business. This is sounding like something from The Onion, isn't it?
It is.
Unfortunately, it's real. YouTube's in the news, causing a storm with upcoming changes to the site that looks set to exclude artists that won't pay them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be bringing you up to date on the Amazon Fire, as Shannon spoke about.
That's right.
And this is the most exciting bit. Dutch scientists may be the ones that will finally allow us to say, "Beam me up, Scotty."
My goodness.
I've always wanted to say that. So,
is there like a Dutch equivalent of Scotty? There's got to be a Dutch sort
Jan.
Of name that is
it would
a bit...
be. It would be Jan.
Yeah.
Beam me up, Jan.
Is Dutch Yordi Yordi Bork Bork? That's that
that's sort of, the Swedish,
that's Swedish chef.
Chef
no,
business.
Sorry. I'm not very...
The great wins. Yeah.
Beam me up, Scotty. Bring me some cheese and chocolate.
No, beam me down, cheese and chocolate.
That's right. Ooh.
Ooh. Yes. I want to reach into my 3D TV and pull it out. We could talk about 3D printing all day today.
We could.
But we won't.
But we won't.
Because Mark's got his fingers on the thing that has your microphone.
Exactly. Hey, this is feeling just like Iran. You know, you guys have banned 3D printing, and Iran, not only have they banned Facebook, but they're now making it illegal to use it.
So not banned 3D printing.
Well, you are the benevolent dictator of the team, I have to say, Michael.
You are ruining my segue. Can we get on to Iran,
right,
please?
All right. Yes. No, Iran. Yes.
Serious business, guys.
Serious business.
Because this is actually pretty awful.
It is.
Yeah. So it's been, you know, If you were in Iran, you have been unable to access Facebook via your normal ISP because it's been shut down since 2009. But now they're taking it one step further. So that if you get caught using it via, using an out-of-country ISP or using a proxy server, then bad things are going to happen to you.
Yeah. And, this is obviously pretty awful because, you know, there are Iranians who are relying on Facebook to keep in touch with family and stuff. It is a bit of a difficult time there, obviously. So any way that any family member can get a hold of people is a good thing, I think.
But there's even though it wasn't really banned beforehand, there's been a recent case where eight Iranians were sentenced to between 8 and 20 years in prison for posting something on Facebook that the local mullahs didn't like. So free speech isn't exactly alive and well there, and it's just taken another hit.
Precisely the opposite, in fact, I would say it's almost... You know, to actually say that Facebook, it's just a website, after all, is illegal, that's like taking it to a whole new level. Like, and it kind of goes against the whole thing, right? Now, like, it's just a tool. Facebook is just a tool that enables communication. So by saying that Facebook is illegal, it's like saying a hammer is illegal to use because it builds bad, I don't know...
buildings or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is saying that... you are not allowed to engage in free speech. You're not allowed to publicise your thoughts. Mm. And we're going to enforce it as much as we can.
Well, and to access pages as well. So there's a woman in prison at the moment, and she's been there for a little while now. And her name's Roya Nabat. Mm. And she's in prison right now. She's actually a UK resident, by the way. Mm. She's visiting Iran. Wow. She's in prison right now for accessing Facebook.
Just for accessing.
For getting on a page that the regime doesn't like.
Yeah.
It's a real concern. It's incredibly worrying. And, I mean, it's not just Facebook generally, but it's very special things in particular. They don't want you accessing Facebook because Facebook doesn't let them control information about...
That's right.
You know,
and it, and, it, and on. It's one of these activities that totalitarian governments seem to employ to shut down people trying to, you know... gang up against them and say, hey, this isn't fair.
Well, it's I don't think it's really about that, though. It's not about, oh, they're worried that people are going to gang up against them. It's about just being authoritarian. Like, it's about people being wanting control and just using every sort of possible mechanism to achieve that.
But the reason for the control, I think, is that if you get people who engage in free talk and thought, and you get enough of these people doing it, then you're going to get this dissent on a large scale, which is then going to be
pressure there is already a lot of dissent on the boil in Iran. This is just one of many things that this regime is doing to squash that specifically. I mean, the regime in particular is very restrictive anyhow, I guess by Western standards, but in terms of the way they treat free speech, and especially after the elections, 2009, I think it was.
Yeah,
it's just been pretty awful. Mm. So... Look, what can you say?
It's a pity that it's moved into the technology space so that technology is now being used to effectively oppress things as well. Like, you know, there was this golden age back in the 90s and the early 2000s of the internet will bring democracy to everyone and enable, you know, freedom of everything. And suddenly, you know, it's actually kind of flipping the other way now. It's almost like the pendulum, for want of a better analogy, is swinging back the other way, and governments are realizing how they can use technology to actually start oppressing people, and that's a real concern.
We saw with the Arab Spring a great deal of use of social media, and I think they know that if they allow that to run rampant in their own area, that's what's going to happen with them as well.
Yeah. Mm.
Certainly the golden age or the honeymoon period of the internet is well and truly over in all countries.
Yeah.
Because like you said, it's, you know, they're tools to spy and to gather information.
Yeah. Mm.
And governments are realising the benefit of that.
Mm. And one could argue as well that the US are one of the main pushers of the technology that will enable this, right? Like the stuff that they're doing with the NSA and so forth, the tools that are reportedly available to these government agencies are pretty sophisticated items. You know, they're surreptitiously inserting extra hardware into stuff as it's being sent out.
The free router upgrade.
Yeah.
And I don't remember if we ever managed to get to talk about this on the show, but it came out a couple of months ago that the CIA made their own version of Twitter to put into Cuba.
Yes.
Like, this is... This isn't even just, oh, that's nice to have a router. This is, we're going to manufacture an entire social network to allow Cuban dissidents to do stuff for our benefit, says the CIA. Of course, they themselves are now on Twitter with their silly jokes, so...
just to show their sense of humour.
Their version of Twitter didn't work so well, so they've just gotten themselves onto the real one instead, right?
Come use our Twitter, it's better. Yes. Now, City Loop. Finally, believe.
Goodness.
Every morning my commute involves getting into the City Loop, and it's like everything goes dark. Sometimes even the train goes dark because not all the lights are on, too.
Yeah.
Sounds like an exciting environment to be squashed in a train cab with lots of people in the dark.
Mm-hmm. I like the bit where it stops in the tunnel and they don't tell you why, and you can just sit there with your lights on and no movement for 10 minutes. That's really cool.
Mm. We had a text in about the Facebook and Iran issue just now by an anonymous person.
Matt.
Thank you, Matt, from Doncaster, making the point that perhaps Facebook will be replaced by something else.
Well, China has got their own equivalent of Facebook that the local residents use because they also have trouble accessing Facebook because it's been cut off. But the Chinese government actively remove posts that they don't like from it.
It is a version of Facebook in China that has actually got all the hooks that the Chinese government
need. In fact, if I was in Iran, I'd probably be scared of posting anything on a local server anyway, because there would be a good chance that they'd know who exactly I am and that come and get you in the middle of the night.
Look, Iran itself, they do a lot of internet censorship. It isn't completely out of the question that they would invent their own Facebook, but it is equally likely, Matt, in Doncaster, that maybe they won't, because they don't want people to communicate and they don't want to make it easy for people to communicate.
Yeah.
With that said, if they are smart about it, and maybe they won't be, I don't know, they may also be... keeping an eye on whether or not people are generating that sort of thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's 14 minutes past midday here on TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze.
Into TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. And we're going to continue with our City Loop story that we got sidetracked on.
So, we were talking about that before. Look, people have been talking about putting coverage in the City Loop for years.
As in mobile coverage.
Yep. I personally would be happy just to be able to sit... I mean, the loop itself... Okay, I work and live north of the city, so I don't always have to go in the City Loop, although often if I'm in the city after work, I'll use it to get home. I would just like to be able to browse the internet for the 20 to 25 minutes it takes me to get on a silly train.
Yeah.
Melbourne Central or something. Yeah. I mean,
is coverage in the stations, but it's a bit haphazard and it depends on who you're with.
And it also depends how long it takes for your phone to actually acquire the signal and so on.
So coming from the southeastern suburbs, there's a part of the... So we're talking in the Caulfield group of train lines. That's anywhere that goes through Caulfield Station. From Caulfield into South Yarra is essentially a black spot as well. You'd think that that area, being Armidale, Hawkesburn, all those quite well-to-do, sort of young, hip-happening suburbs, there would be a need to provide internet access there. But I think it's got something to do with the train line actually being in a cutting, in down below the ground.
Right.
So perhaps that's got that causes some issues with coverage. But I just think, in general, like, our public transport system should be better at coverage than what it is.
Yeah.
I understand there's challenges in getting 1,000 different mobile devices all in a very concentrated area that moves along at 80 kilometres an hour in a tin box, mind you. Like, it's not, it's a metal carriage. There are challenges there, but surely these challenges have been sort of looked at in other areas. Jurisdictions, at least.
Now, it's interesting that you mentioned, whether or not you'd think that people wouldn't realise that we really need this and stuff, rah, rah, rah. It honestly, with the story, it reads as though it's not even about what people actually want. It's that they themselves wanted a digital communication system, and it just so happens that the nice byproduct is that maybe some of us poor consumers can use it too.
Mm. So we're piggybacking onto that.
Right, which might actually explain why it's taking so long to actually get there, because if it was just a matter of, the three big carriers or whatever throwing up, towers or transmitters or whatever it is, then that would be fine. But if they need to actually spec out a whole big thing that is suitable for everybody to communicate, then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suspect the digital communication system that they're implementing is based on very similar technology to what you use for a mobile phone anyway.
Well, it makes sense, right? There's no shortage of mobile phone technology around to make use of if you're going to build.
Exactly.
You know,
and it's well proven. I guess they'd be very short towers in the tunnel, wouldn't they? Now, talking about World Cup again, drones have been causing a bit of a scandal there because they've been accused of spying.
That's right. So, you know, the World Cup is kind of a big deal, and practicing your strategy and all the rest of it is also kind of a big deal, and that's why even the press don't get to go into training sessions and report on what's going on. They just get locked out. But the story is that the French national soccer team, who was having a bit of a session in its training grounds, a bit of kick to kick or whatever, reckon they saw a drone hanging around over the stadium, checking out what was going on, and
hovering with intent
to take down their players, or whatever. I don't know.
Actually, I wonder if that's going to be a new form of crime: hovering with intent.
That's
like
right,
loitering with intent.
Now the rumour or whatever it is that's been kicking around is that it actually is just an enthusiastic fan who just wanted to see what was going on.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, it's obviously football is serious business.
Mm.
You know, we kind of kid around, but it really is, you know, such an enormous big deal. And, you know, if there are teams employing that sort of dodgy drone warfare against each other, that would actually be a pretty big deal. It's not very sporting.
Hopefully we're talking about the type of drone that doesn't have a missile or anything installed. It's simply just a monitoring system.
Yes. Now, drones, of course, you know, can invade your privacy with their cameras, but I'm just waiting for the time when they have some very directional and good microphones.
That's right.
To pick up on some voices.
Text.
So, now, we do have a message from Trish, and she said, put Wi-Fi in trains that works in other countries.
Yes.
But she also pointed out that in the London Underground there's no mobile coverage, which, yeah.
Yeah, although if there is some sort of internet connection that it isn't dependent on mobile coverage and you have Wi-Fi, then no bigs, right?
Mm.
I mean, I would like to be able to make calls at my convenience, but equally I kind of like, you know, having that excuse of I've got to go City Loop, bye, hanging up, and I could be impractical.
Exactly. but your Facebook tracking will tell you where you are, tell your friends where you are.
That's right.
There are challenges though with installing Wi-Fi on trains, right? Like the maintenance of that would be pretty phenomenal if every single train on a system had to have a Wi-Fi sort of system how would it communicate with the rest of the world?
Yeah, and like, and then you're putting the maintenance of that onto the train carrier rather than onto the phone carrier.
Yeah,
well, that's kind of
physically positioned somewhere as opposed to being part of their maintenance program. Yeah,
yeah, that's kind of the interesting question as well. In a sort of privatized system like we have a private train operator running on public infrastructure. You know, there's every time you put government and private industry together, like if you think government takes a long time and you chuck private industry into the mix, you get twice as long. I reckon
there'd be lots of ads.
They sure would. Oh jeez.
Now I wish I could do a pirate voice. Because that's what George Brandis thinks that we are, and a lot of this has come about because of the popularity of Game of Thrones.
It is kind of the benchmark for who's pirating what.
Yes.
No one wants to miss out on that.
I have on purpose. I've not watched it.
You haven't seen any episodes.
I have to exclude myself from every conversation that occurs, like, on a Monday, on a Tuesday morning, I should say.
I stopped halfway through the first episode and haven't gone beyond that. So I haven't been caught up in the fever.
Yes. No, so it of course, is highlighting the concern, or it kind of dovetails with what our Attorney General, what's his face?
Mr. George Brandis.
George Brandis. Senator George Brandis. Is looking at a New Zealand style three strikes rule implementation here in Australia. So looking at implementing you're downloading lots of pirated stuff. Here's your first warning. Here's the second warning. Third warning. Oh, now you're going to be fined, or your internet connection is going to be removed
for life.
Whatever. Yeah, and that's pretty, you know, for life.
And scary. That model is used in other countries. I think France has got a similar model, and so on. But this seems to happen every time we have a new government, whether it be a Labor government or a Liberal government. There's something that pops up that says, "Oh, we're going to block access to these sites. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
We're going to do
and
that."
And it's not even that infrequent. It keeps coming up. It's Look, a couple of the ISPs, including Ionet, they actually were prominent for their piracy-related court cases and stuff like that. So they do quite a lot of reporting on it as well. And they've been, you know, they're really interested in obviously fighting that. It just seems really... what am I trying to say? It seems really just up in the air again. It's like, oh, the same old. Isn't it? People are downloading Game of Thrones. And next year it'll be, you know, True Detective or whatever.
Like, yeah, and there's a whole bunch of things that are going on, I guess. There's a free trade agreement apparently being negotiated with the US at the moment, or sort of bubbling away, but it's being done in a secret manner. I think George Brandis's name is all over it. In terms of what we're negotiating with.
Commercial and confidence. Oh. It's not secret. Commercial and confidence.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Apparently, you know, our government is commercial now. Yeah. Right.
You know what Choice...
It's commercial confidence, yes.
Choice, the consumer advocacy group with Choice Magazine that has all those cool reviews and stuff in it. Their spokesperson actually came out and said, you know what, Foxtel, this is all your own doing. So they, rather than going anything to the AG or anything like that, they said, you know who we're going to point the finger at? We are going to point the finger at that company, and the company that we're pointing the finger at is Foxtel.
Yeah.
And this is on the 7:30 report. And, you know, she's saying how unfair it is that if you do want to do it legitimately, you have to buy some sort of Foxtel plan that requires that you buy, along with the one show that you want to watch, 55 series of Deadliest Catch or whatever. Like,
yeah.
I like a bit of Deadliest Catch, but I don't like all the Deadliest Catch. I swear there's a station on there that only has those sorts of shows, you know.
It's the issue of monopolies, right? Like, there are, you know, if something is a monopoly, there are ways that the government can assist the citizens to make it, you know, fair and equitable. But the fact is, Foxtel is a monopoly right now.
That's right.
On this particular thing. It's such a small component of the bigger picture, but it's such an, you know, if legislation is being introduced to, you know, address this small issue, then maybe something else on the other side should be looked at as well. You know, possibly and this has already been looked at in committees in the parliament around price gouging and companies actually like Apple and so forth, you know, increasing prices for an Australian market just because
they can.
For no other reason. When it's a monopoly, though, in this case, then it's
going to compete with it. But it's more of a bigger issue. It's, you know, we commercially, in terms of a distribution of music and film, TV and so on, we're operating on principles that were devised, you know, literally 100 years ago, where you would appoint a geographic distributor and you would be licensed to distribute this product in this area.
Yes.
Now, those geographic boundaries have disappeared with technology, but our business models haven't changed.
Mm. Yeah.
And we're being forced, you know, like you said, Raina, to get a whole package of stuff that we don't want just to get the one thing that we want. And we should be encouraging these companies to just sell us what we want at a fair and reasonable price.
Yeah,
and if we do that, then we won't pirate it.
They do want to change the models, but they don't want to change the models. We want to change the models. They want to change the models in a way that means that they can just keep on price gouging.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's a problem. It's not just this. I mean, we've got on our list, although hopefully we can get to it, that, you know, there is some price gouging going on with, you know, software and stuff as well, that all these companies just want to do that because reasons. I don't know what the reasons are. I guess it costs a lot to ship bits over the Pacific. As consumers, what can we do? I mean, some people actually see piracy as a suitable middle finger, but I'm not sure that necessarily is the only thing that you can do.
Well, this is, in some ways, piracy is a form of peaceful protest.
I actually have a problem with it being called piracy in the first place.
True.
But, you know, it's obtaining things... In a way that isn't doesn't fulfill the copyright obligations of the person, but it's not about piracy. Piracy is when you go out to a physical location out in the middle of nowhere in a jurisdiction that is not governed and
by
take
physical
stuff.
Force. Yes,
you know,
it is very emotive and it's a very loaded word that's been used on purpose.
Yeah, I guess what I find challenging about the idea that it's a peaceful form of protest to download and not pay, which I will now not call piracy then. but to download that without going to Foxtel and stuff is completely indistinguishable from somebody who is just a freeloader and doesn't care.
Yeah, true.
So my inclination would be to do the old-fashioned thing, get on the letter-writing campaign, get on Malcolm Turnbull, get on Scott Ludlam, he'll back us, I think, and, of course, the Attorney-General himself. And there are plenty of ways to get in touch with your parliament representatives, and by all means do so.
Yeah. Matt from Doncaster messaged in again, making the point that maybe Netflix would halve pirating. And it makes a good point. You know, it to introduce another force in the market.
That's right.
To enable us to do what we want to do in a legitimate way might actually help.
Yeah, look, competition is good, but Netflix is still the same model. I have a basket of goods. You can get access to all of those goods for this price. Lower price, albeit, than, let's say, Foxtel, which is good.
Yep.
But it's still, you can only get access to these goods. And if you want another show that we don't have, well, then, sorry,
you've got to sign up for some other thing that does have it.
And then you're looking at the iTunes model, which is, you know, paying per episode, or, you know, paying a higher price per episode. And in actual fact, the price is quite a lot dearer, you know, for a full season. Of shows, you can pay up to $60 or something, right? Which, I mean, that's 2 months worth of a Foxtel subscription, I suspect, or maybe one.
Right. Look, it's coming up to 29 minutes past midday. I'd like to continue this discussion and talk about price gouging with software, and we shall do so in a few seconds. It's 28 minutes to one, and we have Mark Rayner and myself, Michael, in the studio, and of course you are listening to Technogaze.
Technogaze!
Doing my best to steer the boat here.
In choppy pirate-infested waters.
Any icebergs on the horizon, or are they just under us?
Oh, I can't see any. Maybe I'm not high enough.
I don't feel reassured.
Did you get the sense there was a bit of a draft in here during the news update and the weather broadcast? There was this weird sort of...
Was there? I never noticed.
I'm sure you would never have confessed to that.
Exactly. Now, of course, if anybody wants to get in touch with us during the show, you can email us on air at joy.org.au or SMS 0427 joy949.
Many of your compadres have done so today.
As had Peter. And Peter said that he used to work for German Rail. He had Wi-Fi and mobile coverage in a metal box travelling at 300K.
Mm.
And he is returning, as he's returned to Australia, he's not very, I guess, comfortable with the way that our tracks have been upkept. And he feels that there's probably little incentive for our train operators to provide Wi-Fi.
Well, and this is the thing, right? So the train operators aren't necessarily really, invested in ensuring that the passengers have internet. Like, they don't care, you know. They're just about getting the trains running.
Maybe some of them don't care, although you can do it on V-Line.
Oh,
yeah. Or you're going to be able to do it on V-Line, apparently. It's a plan.
And maybe for longer trips where you are travelling from between city to city, that's appropriate to have Wi-Fi, especially out in the bush where you don't have mobile coverage.
Yeah, look, if I lived in Geelong or something, I would love to be able to spend that hour or so doing a bit of work beforehand so that I could get to work at, say, 10 or something instead of having to get up at 6 to be there by 9 or whatever. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. We touched briefly before about price gouging on software, and there's been some discussion lately about it, and apparently that the gang of large software providers are making a bit of a submission to the government.
Ah, because their feelings are hurt, because the government has said, we don't want you to price gouge our citizens. And these companies are saying, but why?
We can't make any money if we don't do that.
That's right. So they feel that if the government legislates to protect us from silly price gouging, that these companies will attempt to take their business elsewhere.
Out of Australia, really?
Out of Australia. And really? Things like, I'd be tempted to say, we don't need you, scum. But these are big people. These are Apple, Microsoft, Oracle. Telstra is obviously not going to leave the country in a hurry, I should think, but they are part of this group. Intel's part of this group, HP, IBM, etc. So kind of a big deal.
Yeah, but are they just trying to call a bluff, right?
It's got to be an ambit, surely. It's a bit of an ambit claim. We're not going to start. Yeah, come on.
I guess for normal users of software, with, let's say you're a Microsoft user, it doesn't affect you whether Microsoft is in the country or not. As long as I can buy the software, it works. Where representation of the company locally is important is when they're actually dealing with businesses. You know, because businesses often build their own products or utilize their products to help build their products on some of this software, and they need to have local representation. They need to get support locally. They need to understand what's happening with new releases and things like that.
And that's so, right, but they need that support anywhere. They need that support in the US, just as they need it in Australia, just as they need it in the UK, etc. I don't see why the cost of providing local support and local representation is so astronomical that you should pay twice as much for, say, Creative Cloud or whatever. I don't know. I don't even know know what the pricing for that particular product is anymore. But that was always the classic example, right? You could spend, I think it was $1,000 for all of the Adobe products in one bundle.
Yep.
You come to Australia, even with the exchange rate, it was easier to go to the US, purchase a box, bring it back on the plane, and you would have change.
From buying from what airfare, you might have, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get a holiday into the mix, my goodness.
This, you know, this does highlight the fact that the price of a product, the marketing price of a product, has nothing to do with the cost of manufacture. And it's not just software, it's every product out there. That, yes, we will price it to, obviously, to cover our fixed costs and our variable costs, but the actual price that we sell to the consumer is based on what the market is prepared to buy, prepared to pay. And this becomes so much more evident and so much more transparent where we have the internet, and you can see exactly how much people pay in the US, in Europe, and so on, and then you notice the disparity.
And of course there is the other variable of the the exchange rates. The US dollar and the Australian dollar is in particular an interesting example where sometimes we kind of think that it's actually going to go down in price in the, you know, Australian dollar sense.
But here's the thing, parity. I don't mind. I mean, for example, Steam, the game delivery platform. So I have a Steam account. You know, I was checking out some games last night, thinking about buying them because they've got their summer sale on. Oh my goodness! Goodbye paycheck for the week. And but it's amazing. It's like, I don't mind seeing a thing that says this is, you know, US dollars pricing, and then even just a little quick conversion that says, you know, this is the straight up conversion in Australian dollars. You can sort of play that little game of, you know, oh, will the dollar go up or down this week? I don't know.
Yeah.
But honestly, it's I don't think it's so hard for people to.
I know that might work for that. For Steam, but there are other companies that are very much about their price points and very much about, you know, making it very clear that this a standard track on iTunes, for example, is a certain price
and a predictable price.
A predictable price.
It doesn't change every 5 minutes.
And there's some element of that, but I don't think that justifies the huge markup that they actually include.
And the thing is, if they were just charging the same US price at the exchange rate, it's still pretty predictable. Like, the excuse that a lot of these companies do is like, oh, but we don't know how much money we'll get from Australia. Yes, you do. It's always the same amount. It's our exchange rate that's the problem.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing, you know, to be fair to these vendors, in the US, when they advertise the price, it is without local sales tax.
Yeah.
Whereas in Australia, of course, we include GST.
That is true, although that's still, again, something that stays here. It doesn't really go to the...
But when you're comparing prices and you see, oh, it's $1 in the US, well, no, it's $1.06 or $1.10,
really. And I think most of us here know how to do that. Hey, speaking of government, though...
Yeah.
So here's an interesting bit of news, is that, you know, Delimiter, which is a website that has a lot of interesting tech analysis,
right.
And Renee LeMay, I've never actually met the fella. Great admirer of the work, is going to Canberra, throwing in the towel on that website to go and work for Senator Scott Ludlam, hero of the nation.
Yes.
Was that a tongue poking through your cheek?
No. He gave that great big speech that said, we want our country back. I love that speech. Mm. It's pretty great. But Scott Ludlam, he's a Green senator. He obviously cares a lot about technology and stuff like that. And to have somebody who is relatively cluey to become his advisor is pretty sweet.
Mm. In fact, he loves technology so much. He's got a very long title with the Greens, but he's a spokesperson for broadband communication and the digital economy. Plus a whole bunch of other things as well.
Housing, transport, everything. To be fair, there's not that many Greens in Parliament, so they kind of have to take on a lot of jobs.
Yes.
Heavy workload.
That's right. But he's kicking a lot of goals there. And Scott Ludlam is actually a great proponent of not allowing these companies to bend us over a barrel for things, or, you know, to necessarily accept every part of that free trade agreement as well.
Yes.
And I guess it's another reason why it's good to have some diversity in our parliament, so that there are people there to represent us and to speak out over these type of issues.
That's right. That's right.
Now, perhaps a sign of, you know, where we might head if we took on more of a US style approach to media consumption, and the likes of YouTube, of course, is a big
big part of that. This is huge news this week. They've been talking about introducing a new music subscription service, so that you can just use YouTube to look up the music that you're interested in and stuff like that. But a bunch of independent artists who don't want to sign up may be getting excluded in some of the most horrible ways.
That's right. It's not the best. But how about we come back and we talk about that in more detail very, very shortly here on TechnoGaze Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze. Melbourne's lovable radio station, Joy 94.9.
18 minutes to one with Mark, Raina and Michael in the studio. And we just touched on some changes to YouTube.
That's right. And it's kind of getting a bit chewy there. So some of these independent artists who make quite a lot of use of YouTube to get big are possibly going to be excluded in a few really important ways from the YouTube music service that is going to be coming up.
Now, that's
a bit of a worry.
Now, YouTube are changing the way that they do music, and they're partnering with a whole lot of, I guess, record labels and artists to promote music on a pay basis, aren't they?
Yeah, so...
And that if you don't pay up as part of that, then you don't get...
You don't get to enjoy the delicious revenue from this service, which I'm sure will be pushed most wholeheartedly all over YouTube and also all over Google's famous mobile platform. So, look, if basically YouTube is saying if you don't agree to be on it, you won't be on it. But they're also saying, well, you know, we don't want to jeopardize. This is being heavily implied anyway. No one's really sure what's going on yet. It's being heavily implied that not only will we not want you to be part of the music service if you don't want to agree, which is fair enough, they are not going to necessarily allow people to listen to music that's not on their music service, because why would you let people listen to music for free when you want to shove them onto your paid service?
Well, when you have a paid service, if you've got a competing free service, you don't want to have that competition there.
That's exactly right. And remember, when we're talking about indie artists, we're not just talking about some dude in his bedroom with his guitar. Of course, that is an important thing to cherish and nourish, but we're talking about people like Jack White, and we're talking about, you know, other people who are not signed to, you know, EMI, whatever.
I read something that revenue from indie artists and total music industry is something like 36%.
Wow.
So it's not insignificant. You know, Google's issue here is they've had a free service, and now they're changing the model from free to a paid service.
Isn't it interesting, actually?
And that's causing a lot of... it sounds a little bit like News of the World and so on doing that.
There used to be a time when Google would be fighting for, you know, consumers to be able to do what they want with their video clips.
I think those years, long gone.
Yeah, they're long very gone. Much now as part of the big media.
Google
when
has
you think about
only
it.
Ever fought for people, especially since they picked up YouTube, which was a few years ago now. Google has only ever fought for people to want to do cool things with their music when they have seen an opportunity to run a whole bunch of ads on top of it. And this paid thing means, you know, that they'll either have to smash ads all over it.
Yep.
Or more of them, which is going to put people off perhaps or whatever, and I don't know.
To me, this is a real interesting exercise in setting expectations and then not meeting them, and in fact, breaking them. So when Google first started, it was like, you know, whatever's good for the internet is good for us. We're happy with that. You know, we believe in freedom and open and everything else. And so a whole lot of people, yes, were on board with this. And then as they've become more commercial and they've changed their tune a bit, it's like you suddenly feel worse than if they would have started off saying, oh, we're just in it for the money in the commercial side, because there's almost this little promise that they've had between you and them that's now been broken.
Yeah.
Now, it's possibly not all bad in that there are things like Vevo. So I don't know if you've ever looked at YouTube for tunes. I know I do it all the time. So Vevo is a company that does use YouTube as a platform but is actually separate, and they do have their own agreements with those artists and stuff. So it's possibly not all doom and gloom, but it's still pretty distasteful, I've got to say.
Yes, that's right. Now, earlier on this week, I had an instant message from a friend that said, did you hear about Amazon Fire? And my reply was, the jungle or the warehouse? But it turns out to be neither, because Amazon have released a new phone.
Yeah.
The Fire.
It is. The Fire.
The Fire.
Like the operating system that is on the Kindle Fire, but it is not a Kindle at all. It's just a phone.
Yes.
And it's like a fork of Android, but it isn't Android.
No, that's right. Which is the same. The Amazon previously had the Kindle Fire, which is also a fork of Android.
Sure.
As well. But one of the features of the phone is other 3D features that come with it. And I don't know if you remember you'd get the plastic covered cards that had the two images that you'd rotate one way.
Lenticular cards, those are.
What are they called?
Lenticular.
Lenticular cards. Well, I saw a video about this, and it was like a lenticular phone where you had...
Yeah, that's right.
You had the image of the moon at the front and the background behind it, and as you twisted it, the background would move, whereas the image on the front would...
Hang on, it's a little bit
like how the Nintendo 3DS screen works.
Right.
So if you are holding it in the right spot at the right angle, you will get a pretty decent 30 thing.
Is this anything to do with, like, is it anything like the Apple feature that has the background sort of, what is it?
No, so that's a parallax feature. So that literally just uses, like, it just moves your wallpaper around a little bit and keeps the icons where they are, so it looks like there's a bit of motion.
Yeah, but this is actually physically sort of, or not physically, but it's more of an optical illusion of sorts, right?
Well, kind of, but it's also what they're going to use it for. So they're going to be able to use it for games, they're going to be able to use it so that you can take 3D images using the cameras built right into the phone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's that. Look, the other thing that's really exciting about it, or and also possibly a little bit terrifying, is I've got this thing that's called Firefly, and it's a button, and it's actually the same as your camera button, interestingly enough, which I want to get back to because this is actually kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. The Firefly button, so it's like you're wandering around and you're in a shop and you're thinking, boy, I certainly do like the look of this book, which I'm certainly not going to buy here at this marked up price. I'll go to Amazon where it's cheaper. You just point your phone at it, you press the magic button, and kiss your money goodbye because that book is coming to you really soon.
Oh,
you can insta buy.
Really?
That's brilliant.
It's brilliant and also really scary if you have poor impulse control.
Well, yes, true.
And it can also do things like QR barcodes. Firefly is not just the button, like it's the whole process around it. So like you can say, oh, I'm enjoying this song that's playing on Joy right now, point your phone at the radio and it can do a similar thing to, you know, Shazam or whatever.
Yes.
Hear the music and go, yeah, I'll purchase that song for you and just drop it all in there. Here's the thing that's creeping me out about it is that because all of that stuff is being stored in the cloud, so everything that you are, you know, and I mean, you have photos and images and audio and stuff like that as well. It's all tied into Amazon's beautiful ecosystem that it wants to lock you into so it can have all your monies. Mm. Every time you transmit all those pictures and sounds and things like that, Amazon is building a picture of you, a pretty amazing picture of you that isn't always about shopping intent.
Ah, so they're scanning the photos as well and looking for things.
Well, If not yet,
maybe soon.
They're not part of the Firefly thing, but the Firefly thing where you're going, geez, I like the look of this, you know, I might add it to my wish list or whatever, and then you're taking photos. They are building a massive picture of you and where you go and what you do.
Yes.
And it's not clear with the information that they have given us what they are going to do with all that stuff and the ambient audio that comes along with, you know, all those Firefly hits that you're doing and GPS and all that great stuff.
And I guess, you know, if they're the manufacturer of the phone and the operating system, they also know where you are at any point in time, theoretically.
Yeah. Now, there's a story in VentureBeat, which I thought had some really great examples, which I'll sort of touch on. So do you take a lot of pictures of your kids, for example?
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to start pushing you ads for diapers?
Yes.
Are they going to do that?
Have they recognised that it's a child of a certain age?
That's right. Yeah. Or if you tag it as, you know, my family or whatever like that, then it's really obvious. You know, if there's lots of pictures of you going out having, you know, having fun in the outdoors or whatever, are they going to start spruiking mountain biking gear or mountain hiking gear or whatever?
If I'm going to get a device in my pocket that enables this sort of sell opportunity, I want it for free. I'm sorry. In fact, I'd almost want to be paid for it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, give me some bucks and...
You might have to commit to a minimum spend.
Well, hey, it works on credit cards and so forth.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily want to sell my information that way, but you know what? Who gets it for free anyway? Is our pals over at the NSA, maybe? I don't know. Who can say? Who can say? I mean, this has come out after Snowden fled the country, so I don't know if he'll be able to offer any insight, but just imagine, you know, in a year or two's time or whatever, oh, look, the NSA's been looking at all your pictures of your cats.
I've just sort of beautiful marketing tagline, NSA, my cloud partner of choice.
Oh, my goodness.
Not now, Amazon, though.
No, well, I also was thinking, because I come up with these brilliant ideas, you know, Amazon is famous for their one-click buy, you know, when you go to the store, just press one click. As if they had an implant in my brain, it could be a one-thought buy. Oh, I just thought about that, and boom, it's there.
They will stop at nothing less, I'm sure. Well, I mean, you know, but it's that sort of, you know, magic convenient world that we all think about, that you know, our measuring everything. So all these wearable technology, all these internet-enabled fridges, all of these, like, Nest things and stuff like that will know so that we don't even have to think about whether or not we want to buy toilet paper because our household will already told Amazon to send it to us.
Mm. My toilet would have said it's run out. Actually, my toilet will talk to me, you need more.
It'll order up some Metamucil or something. Maybe.
And I think we've reached the point of the conversation where we should move on. I think that is probably the best advice of the day.
I crossed that line, man. You set it up and I knocked it over.
Yes.
Speaking of the line,
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do we have time to talk about some cool technology at the World Cup?
We can very quickly.
Of course, we have our resident World Cup.
It's really exciting.
Fan girl.
Can we put on the sound effect that makes it sound like she's actually there with the crowds cheering in the background?
Yeah.
I've got this. How about this? That's not really...
That's pretty... Cool. No,
okay,
I don't know about that.
Well, what's happening with technology in the...
Okay, so the... my goodness. So the World Cup, notoriously against things like goal line technology and stuff. Mm. So we know if you're a fan of the tennis or whatever, especially the Australian Open, there's that cool thing called Hawkeye. Thank you for the applause. I really appreciate it. There's this cool thing called Hawkeye that can tell the match officials there whether or not the ball has gone out of the line, etc. The World Cup has this cool thing which is called goal control, which takes 3D images of the ball every 2 milliseconds as it enters the sort of sweet spot around the goal. Mm-hmm. And it can tell you now whether the ball has crossed the line, which is what counts as a goal, or whether not. And it sends a little message to the match official via the use of a smartwatch within a second. So it's not like, I don't know if you've ever been to the rugby or whatever, and it's like the referee will go, oh, I need somebody to actually rewind the videotape and watch it again, and you've got to wait and stuff. This actually tells you within a second what the goal line technology thinks the call should be.
Mm. Wow. So it's really to help the referee umpire to call it in or out?
That's right. And the first time it actually got a bit of a use, it was actually kind of cool because the ball failed to cross the line, bounced back, hit the goalkeeper and went back in. So it came up on the screen in the studio, in the stadium to say, not a goal. And, of course, everyone went wild. Mm. It was like, is a goal? Everyone went, what? So I guess they're fine-tuning some
now,
of the broadcast
stuff.
Now,
do you think that the push for the introduction of this technology was at all influenced by the fact that these 3D images can be used to go to people's TV sets?
Look, partly. A lot of them can be. But I think it was more that there were some pretty controversial calls last year that some people were denied goals. Because it's not just whether or not you win or lose or draw or whatever that helps you advance through the World Cup tournament thing. It's also how many goals were scored against or for you that helped determine your standing.
Yes.
So even if, and I think it was, I think it might have been France, even if you were denied a couple of goals, you still won, but maybe that could have actually been the thing that got you over the line. Hopefully this will be a lot fairer.
Oh, well, it's the last bastion of technology, I guess.
Oh, we'll see.
Yes. Now, we're rapidly running out of time here, so we will take a very, very short break, and we will be back. It's Technogaze, Joy 94.9.
Technogaze! Joy 94.9.
And this is Technogaze with Mark, Raina, and Michael on the final leg of our voyage today.
Our five-year mission?
Our five-year mission.
Our ongoing mission, even.
Our ongoing mission to explore the worlds.
To seek out new life, etc. Dutch scientists have invented or unlocked some stuff to do with teleportation?
Yes, they've managed to successfully transport something very small.
It's an atom.
An atom.
That's as small as it gets, pretty much, without breaking it apart.
But they moved it, 10 metres away?
That's
10 feet.
10
away.
Feet, so 3 metres. This is still pretty good.
And with 100% success rate the first time they tried it, which is even more amazing.
Yes, so they actually managed to beam some information encoded into the particles. But, I mean, if you're a fan of Star Trek, as I'm sure many of our listeners have some familiarity with it, that's the idea of the transporter beam technology in the show, is that you're pretty much just encoding all this stuff as information, sending it over, and then reassembling it from local maps.
Yes.
Which is way cool. Especially if we can make that sort of stuff work, then maybe we won't have to worry about Wi-Fi in the city loop anymore.
We won't have to. We won't have to worry about waiting for the postman to deliver our latest order because it'll just be beamed into our house.
That's right.
I am looking forward to that. Well, that's all we have time for today. If you've missed any part of the show, or perhaps you're looking to peruse previous episodes, you can do so by browsing joy.org.au/technogaze or by downloading the podcast from iTunes or Stitcher. Coming up next is a Joy News Bulletin with Shannon, followed by Cravings with Pete Dillon, who will have international super chefs Vikas Khanna, Gabriel Gatte and Shane Delia as guests.
Wow.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. Raina, thank you very much for being here this week.
No, thank you.
And Mark, thank you for avoiding icebergs.
I did my best.
And pirates.
And pirates.
Pirates
and
on the
pirates. Arr. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll catch you next week.
Techno Gaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.